Chapter 4. The towering, muscle-bound orc gazed down at Amreel and I from the back doorway of the tavern, and he was clearly not pleased to see us. Grok's bristly eyebrows were clenched together in a stern look of disapproval, and I had to admit, he cut an impressive figure.
Well, hello to you too, Grok.
Amreel smirked.
After you left, the large man rumbled, a unit of Yeni guards came and tossed my rooms looking for some evidence of where you might have gone.
What did you tell them? I asked as I tried to keep my tone neutral. I'd only met Grok once, a few days ago, when Amreel and I had stayed at his tavern. We'd come to Bermshire to sell the valuable hide of a jeweled cave troll, but Ursinger's men came to the village searching for Ibsith and me, and they'd apparently caused some damage after the fight in the streets. I knew I couldn't expect any sense of loyalty from the orc, but he had helped us out of his tavern when the guards first came, even if that was only to save his own skin.
I told them you hadn't stayed here,
Grok said in a low tone.
But that didn't stop him from searching my tavern, breaking one table, three chairs, two beds upstairs. It seems knowing the two of you's an expensive venture.
I understood what the green-skinned man was getting at right away. I'm sorry for the trouble they caused you, I said, as I took off my backpack and rummaged around for the bag of gold coins the horned woman and I had brought. I hope this'll help with the damages. I pulled out a small handful of coins and handed them to Grok, who took them and looked at the pile of glittering coins in his huge paw of a hand. Honestly, I had no idea if the amount I'd given the orc was a generous or miserly sum, but there was a lot more gold where that came from, and it would be a small price to pay to earn his silence, if not his loyalty. I watched the tavern keeper's face to try to gauge his response, and I looked back over my shoulder at Amreela to try and see her reaction. Both the horned woman and the big orc had great poker faces, though, and I was at a loss. I settled for looking confident about my gift of coins. If it was fine, then Grok would help us, and if it wasn't, then the red-skinned woman and I would just have to find another one of her contacts to bribe. But I suspected Grok hated Ursinger more than he was annoyed by me. Finally, the orc pocketed the coins without comment or a change in expression and glowered at Amreel and I some more. He didn't seem any more angry than he'd been before, but he also didn't invite us into the tavern.
I'll ask again,
Grok said without a change in tone.
What the fuck do you two want?
Just some information.
Amreel shrugged.
We've been laying low for the past few days. What's been going on?
Well,
Grok said with a deep sigh as he leaned against the doorframe, which creaked a little under his great weight.
Ursinger's soldiers have been coming around at least once a day. It seems they're covering the Yeni territory, searching for the lost princess, and any signs of the man who kidnapped her.
Whoever the kidnapper is, he must be powerful to avoid Ursinger's men for so long.
Amreel said with a straight face.
Oh, come off it, we both know the truth.
Grok snorted before he looked me up and down with a speculative gaze.
You don't look like a vampire, or a Zinkari. More like an overgrown gnome with a tiny nose. But I must admit, it's impressive you've escaped Ursinger's clutches for this long. There's some more good news, too. The bounty on your head is more than doubled.
Fantastic, I replied with heavy sarcasm. Is there anything else we should know?
There have been a rash of strange attacks,
Grok said as he scratched his chin.
Whole caravans found dead at times. Never any survivors left to say who's done it.
Where?
The horned woman asked in a curious tone.
All over the three territories of the gloom.
The orc shrugged.
We haven't seen any near Bermshire, though, thank the gods.
No one has any idea who's behind the attacks? I asked with a tilt of my head. Are they robberies?
No one knows for sure,
the green-skinned man replied with a shake of his head.
But they're not ordinary bandits. The level of brutality seems to be abnormal for a common robbery. That's all I know, really. I don't leave Bermshire much, so the only news I get is whatever filters into this corner of the gloom.
Do you know where Scourge is?
Amreel asked.
Would he know more?
I'm not sure.
Grok shrugged again.
He's been scarce since the guards started coming around more. You might check the thieves' tunnels around here, near the southern dead drop. He likes to hang out there.
Thank you, Grok, I said with a nod of my head.
Yeah, now get the fuck out of here before the next patrol of guards comes through.
The muscular tavern keeper grunted with a dismissive wave of his hand.
Between the two of you, a bounty is worth a small fortune.
You'd never turn me in, you'd miss me too much.
Amrila smirked.
Don't tempt me, girl,
he said, but there was no real conviction in his words.
Take care, Grok.
Amrila chuckled with a fond, sisterly smile.
Who's well?
The orc mumbled before he turned and closed the door behind him.
Grok likes you.
The horned woman teased as we turned to make our way back through the alleys of Bermshire. If that's how he acts when he likes someone, I chuckled. I don't want to see what he's like when he hates someone. The Zinkari woman and I followed the back alleys and tried to stay out of sight until we reached the outer limits of the village. Then we carefully made our way through the fields of tall wheat until we had to turn south, toward the thieves' tunnels we'd used to escape Ursinger's men the last time we'd come this way. Grok had mentioned something about a dead drop in the thieves' tunnels, and I remembered a small cave that had been filled with crates and barrels. So, who is Scourge? I asked Amrila as we entered the narrow, winding tunnels to the south of Bermshire. I'd only briefly seen the strange Zinkari man with dark gray skin and large black horns tipped with gold, but he seemed like a fairly conspicuous-looking man to be involved with a secret resistance movement.
He's a spy.
The red-skinned woman shrugged just ahead of me.
A scoundrel and a thief. But he has a gift for gathering information.
Were you two ever, you know... I left the sentence hanging and hoped the horned woman would get my gist.
Ever what?
Amrila asked as she turned and looked at me with a raised eyebrow.
Ever involved with each other? Do you think because we're both Zinkari we would be attracted to each other?
Well, I mean... I waffled and shrugged. I don't know much about your life before we met. I was just asking.
Why are you asking?
Amrila purred as she took a step closer to me. I think you can guess the answer to that, I replied as I rubbed the back of my neck.
Maybe I want you to say it,
she purred. That I want you? I met her eyes. We stared at each other for a few moments, and the tension felt like rubber bands pulling us together. For a moment, we seemed to lean toward each other, but then she bit her lip.
Let's talk about it later,
the black-eyed woman said as she boldly looked me up and down. Oh, come on, I groaned. You were the one who just asked, and...
Because you were the one who asked!
She huffed, crossed her arms, and stuck her nose up in the air. I could see her mouth curl into an adorable smirk.
Anyways, Scourge is not my type. And I don't think Scourge has a type. That's probably why he's so good at what he does. He does not suffer from distractions of the flesh.
Who's your type, then? I asked with a grin. The horned woman smiled mischievously and opened her mouth to answer when suddenly the twang of a bowstring sounded and an arrow came whizzing out of the darkness. The arrow barely missed my head as it came flying over my shoulder, and Amrila ducked in time for it to pass harmlessly over her hair. Fuck! I looked back behind me, but I couldn't see anything in the darkness. Then I crouched down and blocked the red-skinned woman with my body as I pulled up my galil and aimed into the shadows of the tunnel.
A hog that eats the mushroom glows,
came an unfamiliar male's voice from the dark tunnel ahead of me. As I tried to figure out what the fuck that even meant, I heard Amrila let out an exasperated sigh behind me.
But the light goes out when either dies,
the Zinkari woman said in a bored voice, as if she'd repeated the odd phrase dozens of times before. I heard the male voice chuckle, and then out of the shadows a tall figure wrapped in a dark cloak came striding out holding a small crossbow. The dark figure pulled back his hood to reveal the dark face and black horns of Scourge, the Zinkari man we were looking for, and he was pulling back the string of his crossbow to reset it, and grinning like the cat that ate the canary.
You could have killed someone,
Amrila scolded with her hands on her hips.
Nonsense, Scourge replied in a dismissive tone. If I really wanted to shoot you, you'd both be dead.
I don't appreciate being shot at all the same, I said in a flat voice as I looked at the foppish Zinkari man.
That's fair,
Scourge replied in an effeminate tone.
But one can never be too careful in these tunnels. There are thieves about.
Despite my annoyance at having been shot at, I had to admit, the dark gray Zinkari man was kinda likable.
We were looking for you,
Amrila said.
Grok said you might have some information about Ursinger's recent activities.
I'd also be interested in anything you know about these attacks that have been happening recently. I added.
I know a little about both.
The Zinkari man nodded as he hooked his crossbow onto his belt.
Come, we can talk over tea.
The red-skinned woman and I followed Scourge through the thieves' tunnels to a small cave where he'd set up a surprisingly luxurious camp. There were small shelves carved into the walls that had basic necessities arranged on them. Dishes, cooking utensils, and some pots and pans, along with a lovely earthenware tea service, were neatly set on the shelves, plus a few personal effects. There was also a cot with a colorful patchwork blanket and several silk pillows. This looked like a place where Scourge must have spent a lot of time, and I wondered if this was where the strange man lived. The gray man stoked up a fire smoldering in the middle of the space, and as the flames came back to life, I watched the smoke travel up a natural chimney in the ceiling of the cave.
This is very nice, I commented as I looked around the small space. Thank you,
the Zinkari man replied as he inclined his head.
I was never one to rough it, but I'm too fond of my creature comforts. What is it you both wanted to know?
Scourge bustled around the little cave while he gathered up the tea service, a small clay pot, and a little metal device that looked like a strainer. The gray-skinned man poured water from a jug next to the cot into the teapot, and then he hung the pot over the fire on a little hook.
Have you heard anything about Ursinger's whereabouts, or where all of his men are searching for his half-sister?
Amrila asked as she took a seat on a low boulder next to the fire.
He has his men dismantling the Yeni territory,
Scourge said as he poured some dried leaves from the clay pot into the tiny metal strainer.
Emissaries have been sent into the Dolrath and Karadu territories. Even in his fervor to find his sister, Ursinger is still too cautious to send troops into the other tribes' territories. Thank the gods. It would be an easy thing to misinterpret a search party of soldiers as an invading force.
Where in the Yeni territories is Ursinger focusing his efforts? I asked. There hadn't been any Yeni guards close to the entrance of the surface tunnels, but there was still the possibility of other tunnels that led to the surface. Knowing where Ursinger was looking would help give clues to what the mad chief of the Yeni might know or have guessed.
There seems to be a lot of interest in the Great Forest,
the man with the gold-tipped horn said as he lowered the dried leaves in the strainer into the heating teapot.
There is a constant presence of soldiers there. Everywhere else has only seen roving patrols.
What about these bandit attacks?
Amrila asked as she leaned forward with interest.
Do you know anything about that?
There haven't been any survivors to report back.
Scourge shook his head.
But what is strange is where the attacks are taking place.
Where are they taking place? I asked.
Everywhere in the gloom but the Yeni territory,
the gray man said meaningfully and raised his eyebrows.
There have been a few Yeni nobles who've claimed their messengers or a caravan have been slaughtered, but no one seems to have seen any bodies. But in the other territories, there had been countless bodies, all terribly mutilated.
So, are you saying the Yeni are involved? I asked. My eyes narrowed as I caught the Zinkari man's implication. That maybe Ursinger is behind them?
That is a possibility,
Scourge agreed with a nod.
Whatever the motivation is, it's not riches. None of the bodies found have been ransacked. They've all had gold left in their pockets, valuable weapons and armor intact. Whoever's behind these attacks is not interested in money. And the only other thing worth having in life is power.
Or sex,
Amrila added with a wicked grin.
That's debatable.
Scourge chuckled as he wrapped his hand in his cloak and removed the now whistling teapot from its hook above the fire.
But all the same, the bodies have not been robbed or interfered with, beyond the horrific mutilation, of course. But if one were given to speculation, it could be theorized that someone was out to create the appearance of an unknown threat, maybe for political gain.
So, Ursinger can convince the other two tribes to unite against this new enemy, I surmised as the Zinkari man handed me a steaming cup of fragrant tea. But with him at the head of the combined forces, putting Ursinger one step closer to gaining power over the other tribes.
Your man is a clever one.
Scourge said with a wolfish grin toward Amrila as he handed her a cup of floral-scented tea.
I know, that's why I'm with him,
the horned woman replied, and I noticed she didn't correct the her man assumption.
Unfortunately, I cannot prove this is what's on the Mad Chief's mind,
the gray-skinned man said as he poured his own cup of tea.
Whether they like him or not, the Night-Elf tribes are tied together with strong bonds. The Dolrath and Karadu will not move against the Yeni unless we can show them indisputable evidence of Ursinger's treachery.
With all these soldiers out looking for Ibseth, I said as I half thought out loud, the attacks could easily be Ursinger's soldiers. From what it sounds like, they're all over the gloom.
Could be.
Scourge nodded as he sipped on his tea.
But if it is the Yeni soldiers, they're being surprisingly tight-lipped. Soldiers are notorious gossips, and the resistance has ears in every whorehouse throughout the gloom. There's also been no evidence left to implicate the Yeni at any of the attacks. Ursinger is mad, but he's also clever and shrewd. If he's behind the attacks, then the Yeni chief is likely using some other force to stage the attacks.
I didn't want to get sucked into the politics of the underground world. The information that interested me was how Ursinger hadn't seemed to put together that Ibseth was no longer underground, and as long as this was true, I was satisfied. But I would still need to take precautions. Maybe put a security and early warning system in the tunnels on the surface side of the iron door, in case anything or anyone broke through. But for right now, we were safe.
Do you have any other information that might be of use to us, Scourge?
Amrila asked as she finished the last of her tea.
Not at the moment,
the Grey Zhenkari man replied.
But I'll keep an ear out, as always.
I finished the last of my tea, which was fine, but could have used a little sugar. Then my horned companion and I thanked Scourge for his help and said goodbye.
We headed back through the thieves' tunnels and toward the gloom growth, and Amrila's face looked like a storm cloud about to break as we walked.
Penny for your thoughts?
I chuckled as we worked our way through the narrow, winding tunnels.
What?
The horned woman replied in a confused tone.
What is a penny?
It's a small copper coin, I explained.
Why would you pay someone for their thoughts?
It's just a human expression. I laughed as I shook my head. What are you thinking about?
I was wondering how we'll find evidence that Ursinger is behind the attacks.
The red-skinned woman said with a fierce undercurrent in her rich alto voice. Wait. I stopped in my tracks and looked at her. I agree Ursinger needs to be brought down, but I'm not sure how deeply we should be involved with this resistance.
If we do not do it, who will?
Amrila asked with a raised eyebrow.
If we leave it for others to do, how can we expect it to get done?
That was a really good point, actually. I didn't care who was in power among the Night Elves or the general state of politics in the gloom, but Ursinger was dangerous to me and my family, and if I wanted to be free of him, it just made sense to take an active role in bringing him down. Okay, I nodded. We'll talk about it more when we get home. Maybe Ibseth will have some insights on how to find evidence of what Ursinger has planned. Maybe where he keeps private documents, or who he would trust most with his secrets, now that Genius is gone. Finally, we exited the thieves' tunnels and came out on the edge of the large mushroom forest known as the Gloom Growth. Here, the glowing mushrooms of the gloom grow to enormous heights and filled this portion of the caverns with their eerie blue light. Amrila and I walked between the great stalks of the huge mushrooms, and their umbrella-like caps obscured the ceiling of the cave overhead. It seemed peaceful, with the occasional sound of a wild pig or two, or the scampering sounds of other unseen creatures breaking up the silence from time to time. But eventually, another sound broke through the silence, the sound of heavy footfalls. The horned woman and I stopped and looked at each other. Soldiers, I whispered to the red-skinned woman. Amrila nodded and we both took cover behind the huge mushroom stalks. The Zhenkari woman and I hid between two different stalks, about 6 feet away from each other across a game trail. I didn't unsling my galil, and chose to pull my combat knife out of my boot instead. From the sounds of the footsteps, there weren't many of them, but there could be more soldiers nearby, and the sound of my rifle would bring them right to us. I waited for whoever it was to come into view, as the muscles in my shoulders tightened like the coils of a python.
That's ridiculous!
I heard a male tenor scoff from the depths of the mushroom growth.
If you want it to be tender, the only way is to slow roast it on a spit.
Nonsense, the second male voice said. You cook it in a brick oven with vegetables in the pan. The vegetables add moisture, and the pig cooks up before the meat can dry out. On a spit you lose all these lovely drippings.
As the voices grew closer, three night elves in blue armor came into view. One had a blood-red mohawk and beetle-black eyes, but the others had more common long white hair held back in elaborate braids. I was sure Ibsith would have been able to tell the difference between the two white-haired soldiers, but to me they looked almost indistinguishable.
"What do you think, Darius?"
the white-haired elf with a high-pitched voice asked.
"Spit or oven-roasted?"
I think you are both morons who can only think about food.
Red Mohawk replied in a deep, gravelly voice.
The two of you have yammered endlessly about bread, wine, and the best way to roast different meats. We're out here to find the princess and take her back to the chief so he can claim what's due to him. But that being said, any child knows tenderness comes from basting.
I looked across at Amrila, where she was hiding with her hands on the hilts of her swords. The three soldiers, if they didn't change direction, would come down the path between us, and I looked deep into the red-skinned woman's black eyes as a fierce grin started to creep across her face. Amrila's sharp canine teeth peeked out from under her full, red upper lip, and I smiled back at my warrior woman. Then we silently nodded at each other and waited for the right moment to leap from our hiding places at the three Yinni soldiers. Within a few quick, excited heartbeats, the first of the white-haired soldiers came into reach, and I lunged at him with the combat knife. I raked the serrated blade across his arm, and it bit through his leather armor and drew blood.
Ambush!
The elf with the mohawk shouted as he took a step back in surprise. Amrila stepped out from her hiding place and went for the other white-haired elf, but as the horned woman swung her first blade, the soldier hastily pulled out his short sword and parried her attack. But then, the black-eyed woman stabbed at the night elf's trunk with her other blade, which forced him to jump back or be skewered on her short sword. The soldier I fought also tried to step back and get enough space to draw his long sword, but I quickly stepped in closer to prevent him from getting out his weapon. Then, I grabbed the man's free arm and pulled him toward me, and I could feel my heart hammering against my chest. Adrenaline pumped through me and caused my face and hands to feel hot. And then I stepped behind the soldier and brought my hand with the combat knife around the man and up to his neck. I knew the elf was a trained fighting man, and I wouldn't be able to match his skill in hand-to-hand combat. The advantage I had was that he was still off guard for my surprise attack, and I needed to press that advantage and take him down quickly. Moving on pure instinct, I dragged the sharp blade across the white-haired man's throat, and I could feel it grinding against the slight resistance of the elf's windpipe. A moment later, a fountain of blood burst from the soldier's slit throat, and his knees buckled. Then he fell to the ground as he made gurgling sounds like an old radiator. I turned to see Amrila get a good slash across the chest of the soldier she was fighting, and I felt a triumphant surge of fierce pride at our impending victory, when a sudden burst of light to my right drew my attention. A cantaloupe-sized fireball was whizzing right at me, and I barely had time to jump out of its way as it sailed past me and hit a giant mushroom. The fireball burst on impact and stuck to whatever it touched like napalm, and the mushroom sizzled and began to melt. What the hot fuck? I whipped my head around and saw the red-headed soldier with his hands out in front of him as he chanted something under his breath. Between Mohawk's hands, another ball of fire was starting to form out of thin air, like something out of an anime, and the black-eyed elf had a look of deadly concentration on his face. Shit. Then the mohawked man released the fireball, and there was another flash of light as the burning ball flew toward me. Double shit! I ducked down out of the path of the second fireball, but this time I rolled toward the red-haired soldier. When I popped back up, I was only a couple of feet from him, and Mohawk had started to form another fireball while mumbling a magical incantation or something under his breath, but with me within arm's reach, he was forced to move his hands apart and let the ball of fire dissipate back into the ether it had come from. I stepped in with my left foot and slashed at the elf's face with my combat knife. My breath was coming in great gasps, but I focused on slowing it as I saw the fear in the red-haired soldier's face, just as my knife cut into it and sliced right through his eye. For the next few moments, time seemed to creep to a halt as I watched the elf's black eye burst into a gush of blood and internal fluids. Mohawk doubled over as he brought his hands up to his ruined face, and I reared my knife hand back and then brought it up into his gut. The serrated blade pierced his flesh like a hot knife through butter, and then the elf vomited blood before he fell to the ground and died. I looked up at Amrila just in time to see her run her black jeweled blade through the last soldier's ribs. The white-haired elf's body stiffened, and then he too crumpled to the ground.
You Yenny fuck!
The Zinkari woman spat, but then she looked around to look at me and smiled.
Ready to go, partner?
Ready when you are. I grinned as the adrenaline of the fight started to ebb from my blood.